Today on Wings, the power of black women's organizing in the U.S. labor movement.
We're winning. We're winning.
Stay tuned.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Today we celebrate black women labor leaders. I'm Kate Raphael. The other day I dropped in on a Twitter town hall on black workers. I had never been to a Twitter town hall before, and I'm still not sure I know exactly what it is. But one of the things I learned there is that black women are the most receptive to union organizing of any group of workers in the U.S., and campaigns with black women leaders are most likely to succeed. These findings came from a report by the Black Worker Initiative of the Institute for Policy Studies called And Still I Rise, and I will speak with one of the women leaders profiled in that report, Robin Williams. Don't go away.
You may write me down in history with your bitter, twisted lies. You may trod me in the very dirt, but still like dust, I'll rise.
And Still I Rise, Black Women Labor Leaders' Voices, Power, and Promise, is a report created by researchers Kimberly Freeman Brown and Mark Bayard for the Black Worker Initiative, which is a project of the Institute for Policy Studies. Over 400 women responded to a survey, but the researchers also interviewed 27 women leaders. Robin Williams is one of them. I imagine that was an interesting name to be growing up with, Robin.
Absolutely.
But she's not Robin Williams, the comedian back from the grave. She is the Associate Director of Civil Rights and Community Action for United Food and Commercial Workers International Union based in Washington, D.C. Robin, welcome to our show.
Thank you so much, Kate. When I was interviewed for this report, I was the Associate Director of Civil Rights for the United Food and Commercial Workers Union. But since then, I became the Director of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union Civil Rights Department and International Vice President. So I have.
You have been promoted. So great. Congratulations.
Yes, and to another level of leadership since this report.
Well, what do you think is significant about doing a study like this?
I think that the report really tells what we've already know, right? That black women are leaders. It also tells a story about how black women love their union. Women that are in unions, we understand the power of unions. We understand the power of unity and numbers. And the report also shows that black women are more likely to organize into unions. And black women are good union organizers. Black women want to lead, right? Not because we have a big ego, but we want to make sure that our voices are heard. But black women also speak for, I think, for working families, right? We are head of households, you know, more often than white women. We raise our children, but we also support our brothers as well. So the report interviewed working black women, but also black women that are already in the labor movement. It told stories, right? Real stories of our struggles and our success and also what we want to do, right? What we want to do moving forward.
Great. So can you talk about your own history, how you came into the labor movement?
I had my son when I was 18, and I'm a daughter of a preacher. We grew up, you know, with strict black religious values. So after I had my son, I was in school, but I also wanted to work because I didn't want my parents to be left with taking care of my son. I was fortunate enough to get a job for the federal government for a while, but I also worked for Safeway grocery store. And working for Safeway, I realized I had a union, and it was the union actually my father was in when he was working. And my union representative would come in the store, and I thought he had a lot of power, right, to create change. And so I was just really intrigued about the power of a union. So I got involved in the union. And I was asked to be a shop steward. So I was a shop steward for Safeway employees. And we was a close, you know, knit group. After about 5 years, my union asked me to come out and help to organize. So I would come out on leave and help organize. In 1997, my union, the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, was organizing a nursing home in Southern Maryland. And the union organizers had gotten to a point where they could not gather any more support for the organizing campaign. It was a veterans home in St. Mary's County, Maryland, and a lot of the white nurses had signed up on union cards, and they were active in the campaign. But the majority of the nurses and the nursing assistants were black women. So I was asked for my union to come out and to help, you know, go and talk to these women about joining the union. And I did. We had access to the break room and the grounds where they would come outside and smoke cigarettes or come outside and have lunch. And I started, you know, talking to women, both black and white women, about just issues around having enough health care for themselves and what the company was providing for health care, the wages, time home with your own children, but also nurses and nursing assistants, they really care for their patients. So I was able to relate to these women because we basically talked about women issues. So we won that campaign 2 days before Christmas in 1997. And after that, I was hired as an organizer. Then I became a lead organizer for my local union. And I really loved organizing. And so I went on to organize more healthcare workers and training union organizers. And after a few years, my local union president asked me to be a union representative. So I had about 2,500 people in my unit, grocery store workers, healthcare workers, and I had one meatpacking plant. And so I represented our members, and I enjoyed doing that because I worked in Safeway for 13 years, so I knew a union contract, and I really enjoyed that. And then in 2005, I was asked to come work for my international union. And I've been at the United Food and Commercial Workers Union since 2005. There, we had a big organizing campaign at Smithfield Meatpacking Plant in North Carolina. It was a 16-year campaign, and we won that campaign finally in 2008 with the help of community leaders throughout the country. And these workers just, you know, were really great in coming together and organizing. And I do a lot of work. Some people know me as, you know, always beating up on Walmart. We've done a lot of work across the country around Walmart. But I always do my work because I'm in civil rights. I try to do my work through a racial, social, and economic justice lens. Because it's not just about getting more members to become dues-paying union members. It's really about helping all of us to become more empowered in the workplace, in the political arena, socially and economically. So that's what I really enjoy. That's the kind of short version of how I got involved in this work. And I think it's very similar for me to growing up in the church. You know, we always supported each other. And my father was a Christian minister, but he preached about self and community empowerment as well. He helped to integrate a lot of businesses in North Carolina, Ronald Graphics, North Carolina, which is his home. I have a sister that's gay. in the 60s and 70s, being in a black family, my father being one of those old-fashioned apostolic ministers, my parents loved my gay black sister as much as they loved any of us.
One movement that your union has been very instrumental in initiating and sustaining is the Fight for 15. I have seen a lot of leadership of black women on the street, and there's also been a lot of crossover, I think, between that movement and Black Lives Matter initiatives as well as immigrant justice.
Black Lives Matter, these women started Black Lives Matter, which are out of the labor movement, right? When they started, you know, especially, you know, white labor leaders, they're kind of puzzled. But their endurance and never giving up has really opened up a whole opportunity of building relationship. And their platform always involved labor, living wages, you know, the right to collectively bargain, right? The right to a union. And so they're just so amazing.
Is the Fight for 15 something that you've been involved in as in your work as civil rights director?
Yes. The $15 an hour campaign started out of SEIU and the service workers, but it was very close to our Making Change for Walmart campaign. We've been exposing Walmart for many years, and we had strikes over the years, and we had Black Friday actions. And we still have female workers that are discriminated against because of their pregnancy and, you know, and being fired. So I think the Walmart campaign and the Fight for 15 campaign, the fast food workers campaign, these campaigns have allowed all of labor, right, not just one union to be involved. Those movements have brought us together as one movement. I am on the board of the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists, which is a organization of black labor leaders, and we support the Fight for 15. We just had a big action in Baltimore just today. So yeah, I love when workers come out to take ownership of their own plight, as when people take ownership of their, you know, organizing. It's powerful. It changes everything.
My guest is Robin Williams, Civil Rights Director for the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, and we're discussing the recent report, And Still I Rise, Black Women Labor Leaders, Voices, Power, and Promise from the Black Worker Initiative. You know, so much of my experience in social justice movements has been about what a long haul it can be and, you know, how slow change is. Yeah. And yet, $15 an hour, when people started talking about it not that long ago, even the people who were talking about it said, well, it's aspirational. You know, we talk about 15 so that we can really get 12.
Right.
And yet now city after city, state after state are making $15 the minimum wage.
Yes.
And, you know, so maybe not on a national level, but really I think it's been so inspiring to see what grassroots organizing can really achieve.
Yes. When you don't give up, when it's just not like a phase, right? Because that's what they think, right? Oh, this is going to go away. You know, that's what they thought, you know, when Michael Brown's death, oh, Black Lives Matter, it'll go away, right?
Yeah.
Oh, this Fight for 15, it'll go away. You know, organizing at Smithfield, 16 years. Oh, sooner or later, it's too hard, right? But when you have that endurance, and, you know, at one time, even union organizing, if organizers could not get a campaign started and they weren't getting, you know, people to be supportive of the union campaign fast enough, they would cut that campaign and just say, let's go on to something else. But now, they're seeing that we got to create these movements that's everlasting. You know, once we win the $15 now, which we are winning, right, like you said, then we build on it, right? We build on it. Not only are we winning $15 an hour, but we also winning paid sick leave in areas, paid family leave, all these now policies that workers and communities are trying to move on, right? We're winning.
What do you think makes the difference? You know, you said the labor movement used to sort of cut and run, and now they're realizing that that's not the way to do it, you know, what do you think has changed, has led to that change?
I think we got new energy. I think we have new ideas. I think every time we win something big, like, you know, the Smithfield campaign, then it sets the stage of saying, we got to stay in this, right? And I think that the workers won't let you go. Well, imagine if we walk away from Fight for 15 right now. Really? No. No union's going to do that, because I tell you, people remember. We have new activists now. Workers are fighting, you know, fighting and doing these one-day strike and going back to work. I think that we have more unity and communities, ministers and rabbis standing up with these workers. When the Fight for 15 workers, when they do these 1 and 2 day strikes, when they go back to work, most times a community leader walks them back to work to make sure that they get back in there. You know, I just think it's a combination. Workers won't let us stop. We got new energy. We know we got to change the strategy if we want to grow the labor movement.
One of the things that I learned from this report is that Black women have the highest rates of unionization, or of approving unions of any group of workers in the U.S., and campaigns with Black women leaders are the most successful. And yet the original question that the report seeks to address is, why has the organizing success of Black women not resulted in more Black women in leadership positions and helping to shape the direction of the labor movement? I assume part of that is racism and sexism within the labor movement. How have you experienced that, and, you know, how have you been able to confront or counter it?
Yeah, so... That's pretty challenging, and I'm sure probably a high percentage of all women, white women included, and Latino women that's in the labor movement, I'm sure have experienced sexism in some way. But Black women and Latino women, other women of color, we experience that double whammy. It's hard because we love our union. We love our union. And we want to make a difference. And a lot of times it makes you want to give up. And I have experienced racism. I have experienced not your time yet, or I can start a campaign or have an idea. Once that come out of your mouth, it's somebody else's. And they have it, and they write it up, and they get a budget for it. And guess what? They get a staff. And you don't have all of that, right? Or you win something, but you don't get credit for it. If myself as a Black woman in the labor movement, if I had let those things tear me apart and I walk away, and I've been offered other positions, then I wouldn't be where I am today, still trying to make sure that the voice of Black women, Black men, but all workers are heard, and that there is, you know, a different perspective. Because right now, you know, we're working on criminal justice reform in a way that we're doing a restorative right for those that were informally incarcerated. I've been blessed to have a president, international president, Mark Perrone, that believes in that. So that's first, right? But we've worked and tried to push campaigns that we don't get support from leadership. And that's the hard part, where we have worked as organizers and we have brought people into our unions, and then we still are at the bottom of the list. When I was a union organizer, I was training people to become organizers. And they would go into another department before me. And after doing that for about a year or two, I went to my president and said, hey, wait, I'm training them to be organizers, and then you put them in another department. And he said, Robin, if I take you out of organizing, no one would be organizing. Well, how fair is that to me, right? But we experience this, and we still experience it, because, you know, although we work for unions, not every a white man, a white woman, or Black guy are going to treat us as equal in this movement. So I always weigh the situation. Do I walk away? If I walk away, what do my people have to gain or lose? I don't want to have a job where I'm just getting a paycheck. If I'm not making a difference, I don't want to be there. So I say it's always push. You push a little bit, and then you sit back, you know, because we as Black women, you know, they already say, you know, we bitter, we this, we that. But I go to work every day, and I have a smile on my face, and there can be pain, but I'm one that I don't easily give up.
And
I hope that was okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I assume that you know some of these other women leaders who are profiled in this report, and you support each other.
Absolutely. I do know most of these women. And they interviewed 26 of us, but of course there are many more of us. Let me start with Petey Talley from Ohio, and she's featured in the report. Petey is the Secretary Treasurer of the Ohio State AFL-CIO. Petey's been in the labor movement for many years, and Petey is a sister mentor to me. I worked in Ohio in 2008. My union, we were part of Change to Win at that time, and I was one of the leads for the Obama campaign. And I learned so much from Petey Talley. Ohio, we won big in Ohio. And after the campaign, Ohio was hit for the first time with Right to Work. And Petey, being a leader at the AFL-CIO, when labor run campaigns like fighting Right to Work, they don't always think about us, the Black community, as being partners. Or they don't do literature that address the Black community. But Right to Work was written to keep Black workers out of the same workforce with white workers. That's why Right to Work was written.
Interesting. But I didn't know that.
Yes, absolutely. And right to work laws affect Black workers more than any other segment of workers. So Petey Talley, who again is featured in this report, Petey did something very unique. Petey works with an organization that she created called the Unity Campaign. And this Unity Campaign is an organization of all the Black organizations in Ohio. So that includes labor unions, the NAACP, the Urban League, churches, Black churches. So what she did, and I worked with Petey, Petey got the numbers and the data and had a report about if the state of Ohio went right to work, that means take the protections from public sector employees, how will that affect Black workers in the state of Ohio? And so the numbers were, like, astonishing. I was surprised. Petey started having meetings with leaders in the Black community, and we started organizing against Right to Work. Now, then she had the elected officials, Black elected officials, where she was really teaching them what Right to Work would do to Black workers. And so that was really great in helping to defeat Right to Work in Ohio. Rachel Bryan is another leader that's featured in the report. And Rachel is from California. And what's so unique about Rachel? Rachel is a young woman. She works in the Civil Rights Department of the IBEW, the Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. Rachel come out of the criminal justice system, and while she was in the system, she went through an apprenticeship program to become an electrician. Then we have Dr. Toni Lewis. She's actually a doctor, and she is one of the vice presidents for SEIU, and she does yoga. So she really, when I get anxious, she helps me to come back to balance. And if I could just mention Dr. Loretta Johnson, also from the American Federation of Teachers, who has also over the years been a mentor to me. These women that I named, they're from other unions, but we are all a part of one family. What's so good about a sister is that, you know, they tell you the truth, right? Whether it's something you want to hear or don't want to hear. But without my sister mentors, I probably would have lost my mind by now, right? Because this work is hard. You're discriminated against a lot or put down a lot or, you know, your ideas are stolen from you. But without these sisters that we can rely on, we can call, and I can call one of these sisters, and I can tell them things that I know it's not going anywhere other than with them. And then the response I get, I know it's going to be love.
I was raised to support unionization and unions, but I've never personally had the opportunity to be in one because I do office work in the legal industry and it's just not organized at all. And I mean, actually our one attempt was met with skepticism on the part of the unions because they just felt like, hey, these are the firms that fight us, you know, that try to kill our efforts. They're never going to let us organize their workers. I think that, you know, most of my listeners probably have not had the opportunity to be in unions because only something like 11% of workers are in unions in the country and only 6% of workers in the private sector at this point.
Right.
So what can people who might be listening who may not be black women and may not be part of the organized labor movement, you know, what can we do to help achieve the goals of And Still I Rise, which is to get more black women into leadership positions in the labor movement?
Well, I think you doing this interview, I think it's helpful. I know this report was helpful. When you talk about our work, it lifts us up. It really lifts us up into these leadership positions. You know, just say our names.
You know, I love that you said say our names because say their names, say her name, you know, has been a cry that we associate with the Black Lives Matter movement. But typically we mean women who've been killed by the police or women who are incarcerated. And I think one of the great things that this report does is present a picture of black women who are coming into power, who are taking power, who have their struggles, but defy the image of black women as only victims of severe oppression. And so, you know, read this report, enjoy these portraits of women who are doing incredible things, and as Robin Williams has said, say their names. Tell people, tell other people about the incredible women that you're reading about. And this is something every one of us can do. AndStillIRise.org, that's And Still I Rise with dashes in between the words. AndStillIRise.org is where you can download and read this entire inspiring and informative and interesting report by the Black Worker Initiative and the Institute for Policy Studies. Robin Williams has been my guest. She is the Civil Rights Director for the United Food and Commercial Workers International Union based in Washington, D.C. Robin, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Kate Raphael and KPFA Women's Magazine, for sharing this interview. Find more episodes of Women's Magazine at kpfa.org. To hear Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org. And please like our news feed at facebook.com/wingsradio. Wings thanks all our supporters, including your local community radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, whose newest book is called The Gift in the Heart of Language, The Maternal Source of Meaning. The Wing Sound logo is from Libana's album, A Circle is Cast. I'm Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.